intention, interior trucking companies. If you are relying on facility insurance, you could be overpaying. Reduce your insurance cost by $10,000 or more per truck. And good news, we accept drivers with only 1 year of experience. To learn more, just send us text by typing insurance to 365-364-0714. Thank you.
Well, we're going to be talking about fitness for duty in the workplace. And fitness for duty, it's all-encompassing for those in safety-sensitive environments, such as trucking, which can include alcohol and drug testing, occupational health services, and of course, touching on a little bit of COVID-19 stuff.
And that was Jeremy from DriverCheck, and that's what we are talking about today. But stay till near the end when Jeremy starts talking about cognitive testing. It'll blow your mind. I didn't know that we were doing something like that, and it's just great. So that's right near the end of it. He drops that bomb. Welcome to the Dog on It Trucking Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Harris, Safety Dog. And when it comes to trucking safety, the dog is on it. Please, if you would show your appreciation for the podcast by leaving a thumbs up, a comment, a rating, it would help me so much. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you. Now, let's get on with the show. Hey, Jeremy, welcome to the Dog on It Trucking Podcast. How in the heck are you?
I'm doing very well. How about yourself?
Excellent, excellent in this COVID world of ours. Jeremy, before we get started, can you tell us a bit about yourself and how did you get involved with DriverCheck?
Well, I've been a sales and marketing professional for the majority of my career. So I'm now 20 years into my pro career, I guess you could say. And I'd taken a year, like the stars actually really aligned for me. I was able to take a year off in 2015 when my son was born. And when I was ready to go back to the workforce, I was really looking for something that could utilize my marketing passions and creativity. And I live in Kitchener, and I came across this brand manager opportunity with a company called DriverCheck. And so I dug a little bit deeper and found that some of the stuff that they were doing was really fascinating in the alcohol and drug testing world. It's like a 15-minute drive from my house to quaint little Ayr. And Ayr is a town of a few thousand people, so not having to deal with like the 401 traffic. I have so much respect for the trucking community because I don't have the patience to deal with traffic going to the GTA. And the more I learned about DriverCheck, like just when you're going in for interviews, you could feel a real positive energy and vibe. And to me, culture is one of the most important things. And that's what really attracted me to DriverCheck.
So you've been there about 5 years now, if you did this in 2015?
I started in February 2016.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So 4 years in.
That's right.
And
feels like 50.
Well, I imagine anybody working in the health field at the moment, and as we tape this, of course, most people know that we're in the midst of COVID-19, and yes, as we tape this, things are being eased up a little bit here in Ontario, but I would imagine anybody in the health field during this has aged dramatically. How has COVID affected you?
It has been a whirlwind. So I'm married with two youngsters. I have a little guy that's about to turn two next month, and then a 5.5-year-old. So my wife and I have both been working from home full time and managing two little guys. And as chaotic as life is, I've really, really enjoyed the family time. Because as I mentioned, it was 2015 when I was a stay-at-home father. So I had a real good relationship with my newborn son. And so now I'm getting a chance to do that with my two-year-old. So really relishing in the moments to have those things that can you, like 6 months ago, saying that your 9-to-5 was going to be managing work and balancing feeding your children and making sure they're finishing their schoolwork and diapers getting changed, and I'm on Zoom calls and I have kids jumping all over me with lightsabers. So it's been really a lot of fun, Driver check hasn't slowed down at all. We're more busy than ever. And it's just because with everything changing so rapidly on the testing front and all the involvements of workplace safety and when can I bring a person back after they've had a positive, or, you know, being around spouses or loved ones. So it's really fascinating how quickly things change. So personal life, we're hanging in there and actually enjoying it. with like, we miss fast food, we miss going out to the movies, we miss doing all that stuff, but it is for the better. And then work life, I love, I get energized by new and exciting things. And so right now, with how quickly things are evolving, there's never a dull moment with what's going on with COVID.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I've really enjoyed, it's terrible to say, I've enjoyed this time at home and being forced to not socialize nearly as much, but I'm an old guy. Do you think you're going to be able to return to the office? Like, I imagine your job was a full-time office job. Was it not before COVID?
Well, really, it's wherever I have a cell phone and wherever I have a computer is where I can work. So typically, I would go into the office 4 times a week, and I'd have a 1 day work at home anyways. And I manage the sales and marketing teams. And so the sales team, they're either in the office making phone calls, or they're at customer meetings, or they're at trade shows, events. But now everyone's just working from home and making more phone calls or having more Zoom calls like this. So I think we're not in a rush to get back to the office based like on the roles that we do. Like one of the ladies on our marketing team, she's been remote in up north, Larder Lake, for the last year and a half. And so now we have a newfound appreciation for what she's been going through. But we know we can do it. So we're not in a rush to get back, but for like the sales and marketing team, we don't need to be there, but there is other staff from DriverCheck that will need to be in the office on for the day to day.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I think office work has changed for many companies permanently. You know, a friend of mine, you know, that I used to work for an insurance company, and right now, of course, that office is basically shut down. They're all working from home. And even when they go back to work, they've been told that they'll work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks at home, 2 weeks in the office, 2 weeks at home, so that they can keep, you know, the most of the people well separated in the office. Well, I wonder if that's ever going to change, and will companies think, well, geez, maybe I've got too much office space. Not everybody has to come to work. They're quite effective at home. Let's save money on rent. Let the employees save a little bit of money on commuting and lunches and coffees and all that kind of stuff. I just wonder. But
you are preaching to the choir. That's exactly what's going to happen. Companies like, so DriverCheck's been growing at a tremendous rate over the last 3-4 years. And there's only so much building space and air. And now that we have the confidence in our staff that they can still do the job very, very well from home, why get a bigger building and do the rotating shifts? Like, that's what you hear. Some companies do shared office space where you're in 1 or 2 days a week. And, you know, I might be sitting here on Tuesday and Chris might be sitting here on Wednesday. So I think the rotate, I like the idea of the 2 week intervals so that you can have a full sanitization of the between, like almost having like two groups of workers that are in their own little silo or own bubble for the work shifts and keeping them. So I think that'll happen.
Yeah, and I mean, one other benefit to that, if somebody could ever create a software program that could do all this, you know, when the kids go back to school, and this is way off topic, by the way, but, you know, when the kids go back to school, I don't see all the kids going back to school. I think there's going to be some sort of rotation there, and that's going to put added stress onto parents. And then, so if the parents were working 2 weeks at home and 2 weeks in the office, if you and your wife could schedule it so that each of you were obviously on the opposite 2 weeks, now all of a sudden you don't have babysitters and that expense. Your kids are being cared for by their parents, which I think is way better than daycare. And I don't know, I just think it's a better relationship. and everybody's winning. The kids are winning, the parents are winning, and the companies are winning, you know, but hey, what else? Anyways, let's talk about drug testing. that's what I wanted you on the show for, because a couple of weeks ago we were on a show together where we were talking about the future of trucking, and you got into some things that I hadn't heard about with the marijuana testing and stuff. So anyway, let's start off with who needs to be drug tested from a trucking standpoint, if we just talk about truck drivers and trucking companies.
Yeah, so in the trucking industry, you can almost put it into two pools, right? You have the DOT, commercial drivers, people who are going from Canada to the US and vice versa. That's one pool of drivers, and they're mandated to be in an alcohol and drug testing program through the FMCSA. And then drivers who are not crossing the border for commercial vehicles in Canada are not mandated to, say, perform or be part of alcohol and drug testing programs, but each company treat employees in it like they have their own alcohol and drug testing policies. So there are quite a few companies out there that do mandate their non-DOT drivers still are part of pools or still part of pre-employment drug testings. But as far as it's black and white. Yes, if you're driving across the border, you must be in it.
It sure is. And I think a lot of people forget. And one of the other things I wanted to make sure we talked about, because I don't totally understand it, is the drug testing clearinghouse, drug and alcohol testing clearinghouse. Can you just talk a bit about it? I know I've created a couple of videos on the YouTube channel, but who needs to be registered for the drug testing clearinghouse? What's the purpose of this clearinghouse? And do drivers have to register? So there's three questions at you all at once. So who needs to be registered for the drug and alcohol testing clearinghouse, if I'm saying it right?
Yep. No, you got it. So any DOT trucking company, any trucking company that has a driver going across the border, they must be registered with the clearinghouse, with FMCSA.
Okay.
Any individual... the way it works is the clearinghouse itself is an online database, which is operated by the FMCSA. So it contains like all the commercial drivers, alcohol and drug testing violation history. And so it can also track any testing requirements for someone who's on like return to work programs. So then you have the employers, you have third party associations like a driver check, TPAs, and then you have medical review officers. They're required to report any infractions or violations to the FMCSA. And the way it's set up is, if I'm a driver and I'm, because the stake in the ground was on January 1st, 2020. So yeah. If you're a driver that's going for a new job, part of your pre-employment test would be to have a clearinghouse check on you. So Jeremy, as a new driver, would have to create a profile about myself. And then I'm interviewing with Safety Dog for a job with his trucking company. And I would say, hey, Chris, I've registered myself. Now, Safety Dog would do, or a TPA like a driver check, would look at Jeremy's history within the clearinghouse program.
Right. Now, just before I got two questions, but before we move on, if any drivers are watching this, I'll put a link in the show notes below, but I did a video of Chris Harris registering for the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse as a truck driver. So I went through the process myself and videotaped it and put that online. So if you don't know how to do it, it wasn't all that easy, by the way, Jeremy. I know this has nothing to do with driver check, but question for you though, if a trucking company has a driver that tests positive, who reports this information to the clearinghouse? Is it whose responsibility is it, and then who reports it?
Yeah, very valid question, and it is a complicating program because it is so new. But as far as reporting, so Jeremy's gone for a pre-employment drug test. It goes to the lab. It turns up positive or non-negative until further investigation by our MRO team. But driver check would notify the company that there with a violation or a positive test result in Jeremy's profile, and they would then follow up with that individual.
And who tells the clearinghouse about this?
So when we find a positive test result, it'd be the TPA, like a driver check. We would inform the FMCSA that Jeremy's profile has had a violation. Or it could be the company themselves, because there's a lot of the companies that manage the program themselves. Or say if there's a medical review officer, they could also be responsible for reporting it.
But if I'm in with driver check, I use you guys for my drug testing consortium. I don't physically have to do anything then if somebody tests positive. You're going to do that on my behalf for me.
You got it.
Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure, quite honestly. So I'm glad we're talking about that. What's the purpose of the drug of the clearinghouse? I'll say the name wrong, but what's the purpose of the clearinghouse?
Well, really, it was all about safety, protecting our roadways. And the biggest reason is because even though people are mandated to be in a drug testing program, if you're a DOT driver, if I was working for employee A today, or employer A today, I should say, I might have a positive drug test. And instead of me going through like SAP, like the substance abuse professional process, or return to work, the proper process, I can essentially just say goodbye to my employer and go to apply to another job down the street where they might not drug test me, or I'll kind of get a second chance, or maybe the drugs will have gone through my system, or maybe I had a bad day. And it's not judging people, but it's they were just able to move from company to company, and these infractions weren't being reported. And so now if the clearinghouse, if Jeremy's had a violation at company A, if company B comes along to hire me, to hire Jeremy, they would look at my history of the violations, and they would say, oh, okay, well, sorry, Jeremy, we can't hire you because you have a violation. You still have to do your return to work testing and go through that process. So it's just for people jumping around and not reporting their violations.
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it in a different way. I think there was a gap because exactly what you said, a person could quit. If they don't get the drug testing results from the other company, then they don't know about it. And that drug user is still on the road driving a tractor trailer or a bus. There was a bus incident, by the way, where a bus driver, a tour bus company, had a driver. He applied for a new job, failed the pre-employment, so never quit his old job. And then he crashed his bus, killing several people, and he was high at the time. And so that was one of the examples that he used when they created the drug testing clearinghouse. Just there was a hole, and people fell through the hole. So
that's a great example of it.
Yeah. When we were on that other podcast, you were talking, or sorry, before we go there, I was just on a TCA, Truckload Carriers, conference, and one of the fellows there was talking about drug testing, and it was from an American point of view, where he had maps up of how many states have legalized marijuana, and how truck drivers, of course, can't use marijuana. However, have we seen an increase in positive drug tests since Canada legalized marijuana?
Absolutely. It's really interesting. And again, you can break it down to those two pools of DOT versus non-DOT. In the DOT world, we did see an increase immediately after legalization. And DOT, like drug testing, shouldn't have been anything new to people that are already in program. So they've been doing it for, 24 years or so. But what we did find is that there was an immediate increase, and it went up by, I actually have a graph here if you want me to share that screen with you, Chris.
Sure.
So when cannabis was legalized in October 2018, we definitely did see a spike. And again, driver check does more testing than just the trucking industry. The trucking industry, specifically DOT, is used to drug testing. We didn't expect to see a big jump in positive test results. But outside of the trucking world of DOT specific, we did see a significant increase. And so that's why this particular stats here on this slide show that we have seen a jump from about 2.44% of positive rates.
That's like an 80% increase.
You got it. So pretty staggering. And you can see how it trails where it's gone to date. And so this is, to me, the new norm as to where we should be expecting the positive rates, because it hasn't continued to peak. And so it has flattened out. But then when you dig a little bit deeper and you compare DOT, which is the white line on the graph, versus non-DOT, which is the red line. And non-DOT in DryerTech's statistics is trucking within Canada only, but it could also be oil and gas, forestry, mining, manufacturing. So we've always seen that non-DOT has a higher positivity rate. So the positivity rate with THC that we found was 3.59% of the time, which is a bit of a jump, obviously, from earlier, but I was personally expecting it to be higher. The DOT did have a bit of a jump, but 14% in the grand scheme of things after legalization, but we've already started to see that taper back down, which is a really good thing. And again, because drug testing wasn't anything new to the DOT world, now that people have realized that, hey, just because my state or country has legalized cannabis doesn't mean I can use it if I'm a DOT driver. Yeah. So they've caught on. Every other industry hasn't necessarily, except for the ones that have very high testing authority, like testing levels. Right. And just in case anyone's interested in what's going on across our four largest provinces, you can see that BC is leading the way with the highest percentage okay. points for THC, oh, at 4%.
Let me see. I'm just moving the – oh, there. Sorry. Just, I'll make that a little bit smaller, I hope. And there, okay. So there, that's, now we can see what you're talking about. Sorry.
Yep, no worries, yeah. So that just compares the provinces and the positive rates that we've seen for THC. So yeah, it has gone up. DOT, I feel like that population of drivers have been responsible, and the rest of the industries, they, you know, it did go up, but personally I was expecting it to go up more. But I think as there's advancements in testing and you know, the urine test versus oral fluid, it's,
to me, that was interesting to see BC. I just is that where all the hippies moved? I don't know why BC went up so much.
I think BC is one of the loosest provinces, and when I say loose is a little bit more liberal, not politically, but just in general. I believe Alberta is a very conservative province, and they hold safety in a very high regard. So I think testing measures in those safety-sensitive industries are more stringent. So really, when you look at the pockets of provinces, and it's the same thing as what's going on with COVID and related travel. Different territories and provinces kind of have their own regulations on how they're letting people come through and not come through. You see it very commonly within the provinces as well.
Well, yeah, of course, Alberta has a lot of oil and gas, and they don't cross border, but they've had drug testing in their businesses for as long as I can remember. I know BC has some oil and gas, but nothing like Alberta. Their whole economy is based on oil. So, yeah, I would agree with that, that at least the workers there know that they're being drug tested on a more regular basis. And again, here in Ontario, where you and I are from, they've just recently released in the last few months edibles, and I think we're going to see drinkables coming out soon. Are drinkables on the shelf yet for THC?
Not to my knowledge, not in Canada. I've heard a lot of different hype about it in the U.S., but I know that if they were on the shelves, they shouldn't have been. They shouldn't have, like, they weren't regulated properly. I'm not sure when it's supposed to be coming. I know there's been talk, but I don't foresee it this year. I think there was still a lot of regulations they had to go through. And specifically not having beverages that were alcohol and cannabis infused. That was going to be a big no-no. So you'd be more like your cannabis tea or your cannabis pop, carbonated water.
Well, I mean, to me, no, I haven't had any marijuana since I was a teenager, I think, or certainly my early 20s, and I'm an old guy now. But back in those days when I did participate, it wasn't exactly legal either, but alcohol was always involved. You know, and that's usually what led me to smoking a little of that stuff. So anyways, and I did inhale, in case you were going to ask. Just well,
and when you think about it, Chris, like, if you go back to those years when you were consuming, like, marijuana, the strength of it has grown leaps and bounds. So THC, say in, you know, the 70s, 80s, 90s, was probably around 3% THC. And, you know, chances are you probably got high. I'm not asking you to admit anything here. But you probably felt great or slightly impaired. And again, it's tough to know what's a mix of the alcohol you may have been consuming or the cannabis. But either way, people were feeling something. And now today, you're seeing strains of up to 30% THC. And so if you can imagine how you would have felt on something that was 3% THC and times of that by 10. And then if the newer trends is the concentrates. So like your oils or your dabs or your shatter.
Sorry, I don't even know what the heck you're talking about. Oils, like, I know, but what's a dab?
So, and some of this stuff, like, it just boggles my mind, so I'm learning too. But, like, it's a highly concentrated level of THC. So if you think of cannabis, everyone thinks of the pot leaves and the bud and the flower. But now as labs have been able to get their hands on it, it's the more concentrated level of the THC flower. And now they're making that into almost like a powder or an oil. But the THC concentration is now up to like 90%. And you can still smoke it in different forms, but having a joint, say, in the 70s, it's far different than having, say, shatter today, where just if you think about the levels of impairment and how people felt then and compared to today, it's scary.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, as I say, I haven't had – I stay away from the illegal stuff. I mean, I still have an AZ license in my pocket, not that I've ever used it in the last 10 years. But if I ever had to, you know, I could potentially. And, I mean, I go back to the days when I worked at TNT. I was in the drug testing pool because we kept at least two office personnel in the drug testing pool in case one of our owner-operators ever tested positive on a random, then we could go down and bring the owner-operator home and bring his truck home for him. So I'm familiar with driver check. I had to go several times. You know, anyways, how has COVID affected drug testing? What's driver check doing about random drug testing, and how's the whole thing going with COVID? With, you know, I just can't imagine having to do drug testing right now.
Yeah, very, very good question. And things have been changing all along. The one thing that hasn't changed is that the DOT's random program is still continuing. So if you're a DOT driver, you're still part of that random pool. Now, across the board, as far as drug testing in all industries, we have seen a reduction. And that reduction is because a lot of people, you know, either aren't working or they're working from home. So they're not necessarily in as safety-sensitive environments anymore. But because trucking is, you know, an essential service, that's why they didn't stop drug testing across the border.
It's all interesting right now. We're in such a strange world. Anyways, Jeremy, I want to be respectful of your time. This has been awesome. I've learned a lot. What else is there? What parting words would you have, or what haven't we talked about yet that you wanted to make sure trucking companies heard about?
Well, I think that one of the things I'm most excited about is what's evolved with alcohol and drug testing. And we talked about it a little bit on Bonnie's show the other week, but cognition testing. And so...
Okay, you got to explain that one. Yeah. What's cognition testing?
So alcohol and drug testing has been around for 30 years, as you mentioned, the oil gas industry. And it's been urine-based lab testing. So over the last 30 years, there's been all these advancements and technologies, but it's always really been around simply, are you impaired from using alcohol? Like, do you have alcohol in your system? Or are you showing, a positive drug test for methamphetamines, amphetamines, the cannabis, cocaine, etc.? Whereas cognition testing is looking at a person's overall ability to operate or do a job safely. So when you're looking at cognition testing, it's looking at like a cognitive skills like your alertness, attention, concentration, your coordination, your memory, reaction time, how you think about things, your judgment. DriverCheck's been working with a company named DriveAble, who's based out of Alberta, Edmonton. And they have got some fascinating technology, which they've been introducing to medical industries, commercial fleet, transit, and law enforcement. And so these companies are using it as an assessment tool to evaluate a driver's cognitive functions as it relates to driving. And what's really cool is they can actually look at the data and say, what is the rate of performance for what a 20-year-old would be able to do on these cognition tests versus, say, a 60-year-old? And so there's no ageism involved. Because of all the years and years of research studies that they've done, they know what a 60-year-old should be able to perform certain cognitive functions, like someone who's healthy and normal. Just like a 20-year-old would probably be able to score differently than a 60-year-old, but it's not impairing their ability from performing the test. So there's no ageism. And what's actually really interesting, what's come out of it is, instead of just determining, yeah, Jeremy smoked a joint or not, they're actually uncovering health concerns. And so there's this great example of, there's a driver for a busing company, and he was actually one of their better drivers and had been for years. Then the company started getting reports that this driver was having some misses or near accidents, where people on the bus had reported to the employer. So the employer investigated because it was abnormal. But again, just like in the alcohol and drug testing world, this could have been a post incident or near miss or reasonable cause drug test. So what this busing company did is they did this cognition test, and the scores were way out of whack for this individual, for an otherwise what we thought was a healthy individual. Well, it turned out he needed triple bypass surgery. That's why he wasn't performing. So he was able to undergo almost immediate surgery to clear that up. And now he's returned to driving. And again, now he's one of the best drivers. So that's where cognition testing, I think, is really changing the landscaping for when an employer is looking to hire someone. Not just looking at violations of alcohol and drug testing, but uncovering other serious health concerns. So that's what I'm pretty stoked about it.
Well, I mean, that excites me because there's a lot of ways that we can be impaired or not safe to drive or do safety sensitive functions. And it's not always drugs. I'm thinking of different diseases, as you had mentioned, can impair our ability to operate a vehicle safely. As I get older, I remember my mom, she quit driving around 76 or 78. She just made the choice that she no longer thought she was safe on the road anymore. So she thought, I'm just going to quit driving now. She sold her car. So a test like this could be used, I think, in two ways. One, my 76-year-old mother could have been tested and you could have said, no, you're doing fine, and given her the confidence to drive another few years. Or it could have also confirmed her suspicions that she's not very good on the road anymore. So is that really what this is? You call it cognitive? I'll trip over that word a few times.
Yeah, cognition.
Cognition? Okay. Is that what cognition testing?
Sorry.
Yeah, is that what it is?
Yeah, like you can call it cognition testing or cognitive.
Okay. But that's what it is, just testing the people's ability, and it doesn't have to be drug or alcohol impairedness. It's just any type of impairedness.
Yeah, so they're looking at your abilities to do all these different tasks, like your ability to memorize or to react quickly. And it's almost like I've done the test myself. Luckily, I passed because it's in front of all my coworkers. But literally following a ball or tracking where you see an object, or they have you do almost like a mini road test, like a simulator, and you have to identify things to be on the watch out. So you might be watching something over here, but your reaction time to the squirrel versus the child over here. And so the test results will say Jeremy performed, you know, on a level that we know from thousands and thousands of other people we've tested as to what a 42-year-old would be able to operation, how they would be able to operate from their cognition ability.
Well, that's really cool, because I know people who are regular users of marijuana, for instance, and they drive all the time, unfortunately. And I say unfortunately, and you know, you've probably heard this many times, working for Driver Check, it doesn't affect me. And I honestly don't know whether it affects them or not, because they're such a regular user. Well, this cognitive test would be able to prove that either it does or it doesn't. Is that right?
Yeah, in theory, it could. Like, we don't know what impairment means with drug testing. Like, there isn't that silver bullet like we know with alcohol, as if I have this much alcohol in my system, we know Jeremy's impaired. There's nothing like that with cannabis, or really, for that matter, like cocaine. We have cutoff levels, so we know what we think, but to actually say, conduct a study that, yes, Jeremy's impaired from cannabis, we don't have that. But if you look at Jeremy's cognitive ability to perform functions, and if I'm not scoring a certain threshold, then yeah, whether I'm a regular user or not, then I shouldn't be driving. And even like people who've been smoking cannabis for years, like habitually or recreationally or whatever, it's almost like an alcoholic. They build up a tolerance, right? And you see some of these stories that come out, and I follow a lot of sports. You see some of the stories come out of when these athletes are pulled over and turns out that they are alcoholics. Staggering number of what their blood alcohol level was actually at, like 2 or 3 times the legal limit. And it's like, well, how is this person even alive? Well, as it turns out, they've been an alcoholic for years. You know, they are able to drink a 60-ounce of vodka in a day. You look at, say, Brett Favre from the football years. Like, he had a lot of injuries, obviously, being in football. I believe it was Vicodin that he was on. And to start off with 1 or 2 a day, and after he was addicted, he'd be taking 30 or 40 a day. So people do become functioning addicts. And so that's, you have no idea that, you know, Jeremy could be a pothead because he's able to function the job that they're used to. But until you actually do these cognition tests, that's when you might actually find out. It could be an underlying health matter, like say in the trucking world. There's a lot of truckers who don't live the necessary, or truckers don't live the healthiest lifestyle, very sedentary, you know, not able to eat great food. And so there's a lot of obesity. And so there's a lot of telltale signs from some of those persons, like physical attributes, that might lead to, say, sleep apnea. And then sleep apnea is going to keep you from having a good night's sleep. And now you're driving a train or a plane or an automobile, and not on from a lack of sleep, you're going to have an accident, which would never be showed up in an alcohol and drug test.
Yeah, well, and sleep apnea, I kind of know about that, because I've got my CPAP machine, and use it on a regular basis. I say regular, I use it every night. You know, they just, and thank God I have it, because like, I know what, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, what is the difference, like, from when you weren't using it to when you were? Like, do you feel that much better?
Well, because, again, this is back in my insurance days, thank God, because I had benefits then, because those machines are expensive. But I went to my doctor and I said, look, I've got this symptom. I was falling asleep in the afternoon. My territory used to be Windsor and I lived in Mississauga. I couldn't make it from Windsor to Mississauga without having to pull over and having a nap. I just couldn't do it. Anyways, I knew all the signs from my work with the insurance company and trucking. And I went there and I said, this, you know, I'm doing this. I need to be sleep apnea tested. And at first he said, no, because I was overweight, 25 or 30 pounds probably overweight, which I'm 6 foot. So, I mean, that's not, I was borderline obese according to the BMI index. But anyway, so when he did test me, yep, they said, yeah, you're, I was in the mid level. I forget, is there three different levels of sleep apnea? Mild, moderate, and severe or something?
Yeah.
So I was in the middle, but they said, yeah, you need a machine. And as soon as I got on the machine, within days, all of a sudden, I could make that drive again from Windsor to Toronto without having to pull over for a nap. I remember, I shouldn't tell this story, but I will. I fell asleep at my desk in the office. And I thank God I just had come back from Calgary. And the girl who caught me sleeping, because literally I was trying to type out a report and I dozed off. She said, yeah, those late flights coming from Calgary are a killer, aren't they? I said, oh, yeah, yeah. But I knew it wasn't the flight. It was sleep apnea. And I'd just been tested. I hadn't got my machine yet. But anyways, I no longer fell asleep at my desk at work after I got the machine. Never mind trying to operate a truck or any safety piece of equipment, you know. But anyway, so what did I feel? I feel wonderful in comparison. And just more recently, I've changed my diet a bit, and I'm down like 14 pounds, and that makes me feel wonderful because, you know, and I really feel sorry for truck drivers because, as you mentioned, it is sedentary. It's really hard for them to eat well on the road and get some exercise while on the road, you know. Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was going to say, I agree. It's you have to be very motivated to make change and to be very diligent in getting out of your cab, walking around, getting your exercise. But just the amount of fast food availability versus good food, and now with COVID, you know, I've heard a lot of horror stories about how hard it is just to access a good hot meal, right? Yeah. And so that to me really pisses me off, is that we can't even open up more food, like food, essential services, or access to washrooms for people that are doing essential services and keeping the economy open. The least we can do is feed them and give them water. Like, that to me just pisses me off.
Yeah, hail, one second now you got me. Hopefully you can see that.
Yes. Okay, I've been loving what they've been doing. That's awesome.
Yes. So that shirt is from NAL, just so the viewers can know. And NAL, is it in, not Woodstock, what's the truck stop they've been populating?
Oh.
730 truck stop? It's near London, anyways.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, and they're. Yeah.
They've been giving out free food and water one day a week, I think just about every week since COVID started, to thank a truck driver. So that was the least I could do, was to support their cause by buying a t-shirt, you know.
I follow NAL on LinkedIn, so I've seen all the posts that they're doing, what Glenn's the team are doing. It's awesome just to be out there and thanking drivers, so shout out to them.
Yeah, it's great. They're doing a great job. Jeremy, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. That was awesome. I really, especially the cognitive testing part, I wasn't aware of before. Is that, sorry, I got to ask you another question now. I just thinking about it. Is that in our near future, or is it further down the road than what I would like to think?
It is now. There are trucking companies using it now. And so how much it's actually evolved and where it's going to be going for the future, I think it's going to totally change the landscape as to like hiring practice. So we'll start to open it up, not just say, some companies might do physical abilities testing, you know, can I be able to get up and down so many flights of stairs or a ladder, or being able to, you know, load a truck or unload a truck, whereas cognition's looking at the overall person's health. So it'll be all encompassing, but I also think it'll play in part with some of these other programs that are already existing. But I think it's going to start to open up very soon. Like, it's been around for a few years, but there's always new applications. There's always new research coming out. So available today, but transforming tomorrow.
But it's not replacing drug testing.
Not today. You know, maybe 20 years down the road, like, I think there's always going to be an evolution of early adopters and different safety sensitive industries are willing to try new and different things. So there's going to be a champion within a certain industry that might really push for drug testing to be, or not drug testing, cognition testing for it to be the end all be all. But it would take a lot of people to convince to scrap alcohol and drug testing just because of the years and the science that's gone into it. Maybe one day, right? But maybe it's also eventually just like a rapid eye scan of Jeremy's eyeball. And if I blink twice, it means I'm impaired. So if it's blink once, it means I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't know where it's going to be there.
That's cool. Well, unfortunately, it doesn't sound like it's going to be around for me and my drug testing. Because I'm too old for that. But for your generation, maybe. Jeremy, thanks so much for being on the Dog On It Trucking Podcast. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And I have one last thing for you, Chris. You inspired me last time with your nice hair. So I wanted to make sure I had this handy.
Oh, the Buffalo fan. So here, just one second. I've got to... See, now, I could put this on, of course, and so you know where that came from, obviously. I don't know how old this is. I've had this for a few years, but this is what Jeremy's referring to. So,
it's a good look. You look like a professional golfer.
Hey, I wish I'd made their money. All right, Jeremy, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Safety Dog.
Hope you loved the show as much as I did. Please leave us a like, a thumbs up, a review, a comment, a rating if it is in your heart. Thank you so much. And I do really appreciate your time. And join us again next week for another exciting interview.